We're super excited. We have a guest on today.
I know. It's super exciting. We haven't had a guest on in a while.
It has been a while since we've had a guest on Market Abilities, the MGM podcast by Growing Media. Welcome, John Musgrave.
Thank you for having me.
Yes. So listen to this. This is a phenomenal introduction. Okay, I'm going to take it verbatim, like if you Google him.
Right? I was hoping you were going to do it because I was going to try to plan something out.
But never do. So I knew that you would not have anything planned. It's fine. It's fine. But a native of Southern Illinois, John Musgrave has long found its violent history quite dramatic and has written, co-authored, or edited 8 books about the region. Are we at a larger number now, or is it still 8?
I think it's 9 or 10.
It's 9 or 10 at this point. He has appeared on camera as a historical expert on the area's killers for both the History Channel and the Investigation Discovery Channel. How about that?
That's incredible.
That's big. How do they find you?
And you didn't find the part about...
All the other stuff. Yeah, we won't talk about that.
Chauffeuring a rattlesnake for Dig 2 Graves. That was special.
Well, now you got to talk about that.
No.
Some things you want to forget, right?
Yes.
But I've always found your work very interesting, and in part because you've relied heavily on the grassroots means of getting your storytelling out there and writing books and sitting at the table and signing for people. How did that fascination start when you wanted to be an author? And let's talk a little bit about that progression and people finding out about you.
I think it started as a small child. I always liked to read. The first books I remember after Green Eggs and Ham and all the Dr. Seuss books was 2 childhood autobiographies of Abraham Lincoln and George Washington. And they were written at that level of Dr. Seuss practically.
Wow.
So I've always kind of been fascinated with the history part, but also for my grandmother. My grandmother lived in Marion, but she also had a farm out on the east side of the county. And every once in a while, I would hear family stories involving Charlie Berger. Because my great-grandparents had a store probably about a quarter mile away from his headquarters at Shady Rest.
For those people who are unaware of Charlie Berger, go ahead and wasn't a great guy, was he?
No, he was one of the biggest gangsters in Southern Illinois. In fact, the year of his murder trial in 1927, you can find references to Al Capone being identified as the Charlie Berger of Chicago.
There it is. What? That's what I told you. Some heavy stuff.
Man. So I'm not from here. So I moved here about 6 years ago. And I've heard some stories about this before, but I've never known that it was like that
bad
big of a
dude.
Deal.
Yeah. We had the Heron Massacre in 1922, which is called the Mine War, and that was followed by the Klan War, which is the Klan versus the bootleggers over liquor sales. And the gangs involved in that, in the bootlegging at that point, was Charlie Berger and the Shelton brothers, plus a number of just independent people that had roadhouses and everything. They put the Klan in its place after a series of shootouts. And we had shootouts on the street, just like the shootout at the OK Corral.
Oh, yeah.
We had the shootout at the Smith Garage that left
what
7 people
heck?
Dead. And then after that, the gangs decided they were going to do a slot machine partnership, and they put slot machines everywhere. The Made Right Cafe in Christopher, Illinois, which has been in business since at least the 20s, they had slot machines up until the early 30s, which be from that era.
Right.
If you walked into McDonald's and you realized they had taken out the playpen and put in video gaming for the parents, that was how widespread it was.
Yeah.
The gang split. They started fighting each other, and we ended up with what's known as the gang war. Berger was tried for a murder that he didn't commit, but that he hired a couple orphans to shoot.
Sure.
To shoot the mayor of West City, which was one of his rivals. And he was hung in Benton in 1928.
Interestingly enough, they have that little, it's almost like a little memento. Or just drive by. Just take a look at the platform where he was.
In Christopher?
In Benton.
In Benton,
Where
it's the Franklin County Jail Museum.
Okay.
Yeah, where they hung him. Right there.
And the platform outside is a reproduction that they did.
Oh, I thought that was like the real deal.
Well, a couple of years ago, they found the real one in a barn here in Jackson County because it belonged to the Jackson County Sheriff's Department.
Who do you trust? What?
And they have all the pieces upstairs in the museum now in one of the cell blocks.
That's so crazy.
And it's just like every piece, and it's cut out and notched, and you just put it together and, you know, screw the bolts in, and you should
was
have
the platform
ready.
Just built for Charlie, or had they used it for other individuals?
Jackson
who also...
County had actually built it a few years earlier for a hanging.
Okay.
And because counties didn't want to go to the expense of doing it, and I was like, once you've done it once, you kind of just keep it in storage. And it was funny, every 20, 30 years, the Southern Illinois would run a story how they found it again in the basement of the courthouse.
Oh my gosh, that is hilarious.
And in the 70s, they finally needed that space for office space, so they took it to the highway department. Then for the bicentennial celebration at Grand Tower, they borrowed it and reassembled it. And apparently it never got back to the highway department, or the highway department said, keep it. So it ended up in somebody's barn.
Look at here, Lucas. Look what I got out here in my barn.
Yeah.
And oh, it's like, gosh. It's not obvious what it is, but they probably still had the rope with the noose in it that they used in 76.
Oh, totally.
On top. And then they realized, oh, that's where it went. So they called the jail museum and said, hey, do you want this? And yes.
For all time.
Is it weird to have like a sudden urge to now just go to find like random barns and see if I can find something historical?
Right.
Oh, what's funny is like right now, this week and next month, there is the actual noose used in Berger's hanging is on display in Benton.
Oh my!
At an antique store on the north side of the square.
Oh my goodness!
We gotta go.
Yeah, we must go.
And there's also some guns from the Sheltons.
And you need to pick up John's books. You know, you've got Inside the Shelton Gang. You've got The Bloody Vendetta. Yes. And then now you also have written a lot about the slave house.
Yes.
People who don't know about that. Are you familiar with the...
No, I'm not.
You're about to be. Okay, yeah. He also wrote about that.
The old slave house was a privately owned site that was open from 1926 to 1996 as a tourist attraction museum.
Mm-hmm.
Closed in 96. The state bought it in 2000, but they've never done anything with it.
It's haunted.
People say it's haunted. Mm-hmm. And what's funny, although the owner would not talk about the ghost stories because... Mm. When he closed, he was trying to sell it to the state, and he knew the state didn't like it.
Mm-hmm.
When we were doing the historical research, we discovered, the ghost stories date back at least to 1851.
Yikes.
Because back in the 30s, when somebody was doing some research, they interviewed the oldest lady in town, who was a German immigrant who came over in 1850. Mm-hmm. Her family moved into the house when it was vacant in 51, and they knew it was haunted because the neighbors had told them. It was haunted. That the neighbors had heard strange noises coming from the third floor, which is the attic area, which apparently that's where they kidnapped. John Hart Crenshaw kidnapped free blacks and sold them south into slavery.
Mm-hmm.
So what if you've seen the movie 12 Years a Slave about Solomon Northrup, that is a true story based on Northrup's autobiography that he wrote and published prior to the Civil War after he was freed.
Mm-hmm.
But the kidnapping syndicates that captured him and sold him south into slavery. We see that all up and down, particularly down the Ohio River. And Crenshaw was basically part of that or leading that effort in southeastern Illinois, which means this house today is the last station on the reverse underground railroad still standing in the entire country.
Wow.
That
incredible.
We know about.
That sounds so interesting.
It is interesting.
How much digging do you have to do for this? Like, is any of it well documented?
Career out of it. Yeah.
It's amazing because when I was writing that book, how many paragraphs are based on multiple footnotes that it's a sentence or two out of some letter that survived in somebody's legal papers or it's deed records. We went all over the place. I've been to Austin and Houston, Milam County, which is where the kidnapper ended up going
to. You track these stories.
You just follow and it's like figure out where they're at.
Mm-hmm.
The card catalog of the state archives on microfilm, and then he found a card said Crenshaw, John, murdered.
Whoa!
Crenshaw getting murdered has never been a story that was told the tourist over 70 years. Never seen anything like that. So the next day he goes to, it was just his day off on Monday, he goes to Springfield, finds the card, finds the archivist and says, hey, Cody, I want whatever this card is pointing to. And it was letters written by five different men or signed by five different men, asking the governor to pardon these three black men for assault with intent to murder because of this kidnapping that had taken place 4 years earlier.
Wow.
And if you read between the lines, one of those guys, the letters included signatures from both lawmakers from Gallatin County, one of which had been an attorney hired by Crenshaw to help prosecute the men. Whoa. Because he noted that Crenshaw employed the entire bar for the prosecution.
You do and business they
actually,
where you can.
And they actually had to wait another term of the court to find an attorney for the defense. And they finally found some old school teacher who once been admitted to the bar that had a drinking problem. he'd been admitted to more than one bar, apparently. You know, to work with the prosecution.
Dun, dun. Yeah. that was really good. I got that.
Which one of these buttons is that sound effect?
That's there it. Okay. There it is. Yeah. Lucas wasn't loud enough.
I'll give you a signal the next time I come up with one of those.
That's so good. It's crazy. And you know, the fact that, are you having to submit these things, or the History Channel and some of the big broadcasts, they just find you based on some of these books and such? Because these are things people are just fascinated by, obviously.
Well, it's amazing. For the History Channel, the Slave House closed in 96 on Halloween. We've found, you know, November, early December was our busiest time period. We printed our initial findings in Spring House magazine. Mm-hmm. I was a reporter at the Daily Register in Harrisburg, so I was able to get that out through the newspaper. We brought in somebody from the National Park Service to look at the site between Christmas and New Year's, and he basically said, if you can prove it, you've got one of the key sites in the country to interpret slavery. Because it was all the exceptions to the rule. Slavery in a free state. It was the use of indentured servitude rather than actual outright chattel slavery. We had the problems that free blacks were facing. A lot of people didn't realize we had free people of color prior to the Civil War. It's like, yes, we had thriving communities. And over time, as we find more and more, you know, we've identified more than a little over 100 victims of kidnappings or attempted kidnappings in the Wabash, Ohio valleys in southeastern Illinois. And Crenshaw's connected to over 60 of them.
Mm. Look at that.
That's crazy.
See, that's why you have to have people like John Musgrave to document. I mean, it would be lost.
Yeah, you know? I would never you would even know about any of this.
Known.
Yes,
and
this is
incredible. You would not know that you needed to go to Barnes and find the...
What has been your favorite, or maybe two or three favorite parts of the journey that you've been on, discovering,
I think
all of this?
The research. As a print reporter, I'd go over to the courthouse and check something up. And especially in newspaper reporting, if you ever want to protect yourself from libel, make certain that you're reporting from an official document.
That's right.
So as long as you have that police report, as long as you have that internal review that the health department paid for, and one of their members was nice enough to follow you back to the office after the meeting and hand you a copy, then you're clear.
Right.
You can run with it. I had never done the really in-depth historical research. And Ron Nelson, who was the guy who actually started doing this research, he'd done decades of church histories, and especially the early 1800s. I mean, we'd run across the name, and it's like, oh, yeah, that's so-and-so. He was a messenger to the Muddy River Baptist Association Conference in 1832. I mean, he was that familiar, that time period, that he would recognize people. So working with him, working with Gary DeNeal, who was the publisher of Spring House magazine at the time, and he was also the man who did all the interviews and the research in the 70s for the Burger book, A Night of Another Sort, and getting to hear stories every once in a while as we would drive into Kentucky or go up to Champaign or Springfield. And you just, it was something that I wasn't used to. And then you had asked me earlier, it's like, how do we get on the History Channel? Mm-hmm. That was in 96. In 97, the summer of 97, we heard this rumor that the History Channel was going to shoot a movie at Cave and Rock. And there's going to be some people down there this weekend, or the weekend coming up. So I went down there. It was also the dedication of the Ohio River Scenic Byway.
Right.
So there's events going on up and down the river. And I met some of the reenactors who were going to be in that. One of them was one of the coordinators for the reenactment team. I didn't know any of the three or four there, but the next month they were actually going to film for the show In Search of History, and they were doing an episode on the River Pirates. Mm-hmm. Well, we had, from the time the Slave House story started, the salt in the title, Illinois had salt wells and the salt industry, and that was our first big industry, and that was our justification for slavery. Mm-hmm. And Crenshaw was a salt maker. So I had been looking at early history of salt works, particularly in Kentucky, and then when it came into Illinois. So I had been looking at the 1799 issues of the Kentucky Gazette. Mm-hmm. It's really easy to look up newspaper stories from that time period because they only have one newspaper in mm-hmm. Kentucky that right. early. But I would see references to Duff the Counterfeiter. Well, Duff is, I've always been interested in his story, and one of my novels is actually, he's a major character in that. But he was like 17, 18 years old at the time. He mm-hmm. was leading a group, a hunting party that's just been at Kaskaskia. So I'm assuming this hunting party was made up of teenagers or people close to his age.
Right.
So that kind of fascinates me, you know, for someone that young to be put in a position and then... But then I was also seeing stories about the Harps. Mm. Big Harp and Little Harp, they're frontier serial killers, although technically it's more spree killers because they didn't do it the same way each time. Mm. But over an eight-month period from December 1798 to August 1799, they're responsible for more than 40 deaths. Well, one of the other early American writers, James Hall, what came to Illinois late 18-teens, about the time Illinois became a state. Mm. He worked for the paper, so he was a writer. His parents had the only magazine in the country, the Portfolio in Philadelphia. Mm. So he would write stories about the West. They might run in the Shawneetown paper. They're definitely going to run in the Portfolio out of Philadelphia. And a lot of times these stories go back to London and mm. either run in magazines or eventually books.
Wow.
But he writes, he's one of the first people that write about the Harps, which is a quarter century later. But he's writing about the stories in Illinois. So I did a really extensive big feature story on the Harps. So I was telling the people about that when I was down at the cave. And so by the next month, I ended up as a on-air expert for the Harps.
They loved you.
I was able to deliver exactly what they wanted. They had a scene where... Two pirates they're on a rock that is out off the shore in the Ohio River, and they're swinging a third guy between them, and it's like one, two, three, splash. So they're shooting that down at the river. I'm on the bluff above taking pictures of the same thing for the paper. So I know that's footage they're going to use because it's just too good not to. I knew they were going to ask me about what's the difference between river pirates and... you know, what everybody else thinks of pirates.
Yeah.
You know, so I was able to come up with the phrase, it doesn't matter if it's pirates on the Ohio or pirates on the Caribbean.
Right.
Either way, you could find yourself in a watery grave.
Very nice. Look at you.
That's exactly what they used.
Look at you.
What's funny is like when that finally came out, we didn't have the History Channel on our cable system.
Darn it.
I thought my uncle did, but his cable was out.
Darn it.
So I watched this at the DirecTV display in Sears.
That's incredible.
To answer your question, I'm sensing though that it's just finding history
and
preserving and
well, and finding the story.
Absolutely.
You know, it's like it doesn't matter what you're trying to do. If it's nonfiction, if it's screenwriting, which I'm doing, if it's writing a novel, mm-hmm. Or even commercials.
Right.
You know, it's like what's your story that's more interesting than just a series of facts.
And everybody has a story, you know. But I think it's so interesting, and maybe we're seeing it happen in front of us. You know, the name of this podcast, Market Abilities. How can we afford to continue to take care of people like you? You have a desire to go out and encapsulate and keep these stories for us forever. And I think Hollywood and directors like yourself and writers. Mm-hmm. That's why we're seeing more of these period films and these period series, because there's a lot of truth in that. And maybe, you know, the names have changed, but the stories are the same.
Yeah, about 10 or 12 years ago, I was maybe a little longer. I was approached by a St. Louis filmmaker with roots in the region.
Uh-huh.
I was tourism director at the time. That's why they were reaching out to me in Williamson County because they wanted he wanted to do a script and maybe do something on our Bloody Williamson, our 1920s history. Mm-hmm. Well, they didn't know I'd already written a script, which is set at Cave and Rock in the days of the River Pirates.
Right.
And I was already researching because of articles I had done as a reporter over the years. I already knew some things that weren't in the books. So we ended up getting together.
Did you sell them the script?
Write a script. No, we wrote the script together. Mm. And we put too much in it.
Okay.
We weren't following kind of the standard rules of
keep
identifying
sexy.
A character.
Yeah.
Keep it.
Right.
Keep the focus on that. So we split it. We're going to do End of the Heron Massacre up to European Hotel Shootout, which technically ends the Klan War at that point, and then start with, there's a big revival after that that kind of, it's more reconciliation, which is desperately what was needed. Too bad the gangsters didn't actually attend.
Imagine that.
Yeah, and then go all the way to Burgers Hanging. And again, that was better, but it was still way too much in it. I pitched this project a few years ago, and I realized then, it's like, I need to pitch this as a series. I need to figure out.
Well, it has to be a series,
Because we can focus, and there has been more interest. And I'm thinking, what have I done that I could, you know, turn into a thriller?
Sure.
And I got the idea, it's like, oh, let's do this, but I don't want to do it in the 1830s. Let's take it up to the 1960s, where the Cave and Rock Ferry is the same ferry.
Yeah.
You know, the barges look the same. They just use a smaller barge, you know. They still have the boat they were using in the 50s. Now they have two bigger ones that they use most of the time. Like, that could work. And I just outlined the story and made it into a script for a feature. Even if I don't sell this, this will be turned into a novel.
Well,
because this is, because it leads to different issue with marketing.
Right.
When I do regional history books, I sell in the region that I'm writing about.
Right.
Because that's where most of my readers are at.
Sure.
People,
if
I'm writing about Southern Illinois, it's people who are from Southern Illinois or live in Southern Illinois or whose ancestors were in Southern Illinois.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So I do that on my website. I do that in local retailers and mostly non-traditional retailers because tourists like nonfiction, regional history about where they're going.
Oh, sure.
My best places are Garden of the Gods Outpost, which is next to our number one tourist attraction, Garden of the Gods, and on the east side of the forest, and at like Giant City Lodge, which is one of the top attractions over here on the west side, or the Mach 1 truck stops along Interstate 57.
Wow.
Because they get a high turnover of visitors, and they're all tourists for the most part. And because they're on the interstate, they're big enough, they actually do a lot of retail stuff anyway.
Yeah.
Now, for novels, it's different. The one novel I've done, The Counterfeiter's Son, which is set at Cave and Rock in the days of the River Pirates, it hasn't sold nearly as well as my nonfiction. But that's because it's on the shelf with nonfiction books.
Right.
Even when I'm doing a book signing at some big event, I talk about the old Slave House book, because it's the one book I've written myself. It's nonfiction. It's the biggest book. It's a hard, you know, it was a hardcover. This one isn't, but it's like, it's the most expensive book. Obviously, I'm going to promote this one. then I'm going to promote the books, the three Bloody Williamson books that I've co-authored. Then there's a couple that I've edited. Then there's two books that I published for other authors. And then there's now, in the last few years, there's books that I'm distributing for even more authors. So I'm telling all of that. And then I get around to the novels.
Yeah.
And by that point, I'm exhausted and the customer's exhausted. So while it's a young adult novel, I would say 90% of the people I've sold it to and the readers are adults.
Older, So we need whoever may be listening and they have a lot of money to just throw at this, and we'll do a really interesting series. We'll do several series.
That'd be cool.
Yeah. And Growing Media is happy to shoot it. I mean, we'll take care of that for you if you've got the script. I mean, we'll get it done, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's the way you have to. Cool. Yeah, it really will. And these are stories that need to be told. You like to tell the stories that really probably were not meant to be told, like they were meant to be swept under the rug.
Yeah,
and you're like, nope, let's lift that.
Yeah, sometimes you have to you have to wait till some people die?
You said it. I didn't.
Well, it's like I have talked to people who said, good thing you called me now. And if you called me last summer, I wouldn't have talked to you out of honor for my grandfather.
He's still alive.
Because it's his first wife that was
sure
the ex-wife of a gangster.
Wow. Yeah.
I didn't realize how connected your part of your family was to
Well, it's like they're here. They're right in that area of Shady Rest. So I had an aunt who, when she was an infant, her brother, he was probably 3 or 4, threw a book at her, hit her in the face, broke a lot of blood vessels and everything. Wow. So she was permanently disfigured on one side.
Oh, my.
And, of course, she's the one that became a journalist.
Right.
Which first person in the family to go to college, which strongly influenced my mother into going to college and getting her degrees, which influenced me, particularly on the writing side.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, there's stories of going to Shady Rest, getting ice to come back, or Burger offering to pay for a surgery, or my great-grandfather, great-great-grandfather renting to Burger accidentally, not knowing who he was, not getting paid rent after he said he needed to get out, and he didn't. So there's a lot of those stories. And then as I do research, because my family is from Southern Illinois and has been from Southern Illinois since before the Civil War, I start running into relatives who are close to these other people. In researching the old slave house, I discovered 9 months into the research, I descend from Crenshaw's father-in-law.
Whoa.
So that's Aunt Sina and Uncle John at the slave
house. Wow.
Granted, it's like great, 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 great aunts and stuff.
That's good incredible. Stuff.
Yeah. You have to Google him. You have to. There's tons of information about you online. And I mean, we've made the call out, right? If anybody wants to fund the series. Yeah.
Where can people find you?
They can find me on Facebook under my name, and you'll see historical photos.
J-O-N.
Okay. Musgrave, M-U-S-G-R-A-V-E. My website is illinoishistory.com.
Yes.
Which I know I need to update.
That URL. Wow.
Well, the website's over 25 years old.
That's how you got it then, right?
There are some pages on that website that the HTML is 25 years old.
Oh, no.
Wow.
One of those pages on the history of the Shawnee National Forest stole and put on their website, which is fine with me because... Right. The history is from one of their employees that wrote it back in the 30s or 40s.
Yeah. But they could have asked.
They could have asked. And it's like, I discovered it later on. But it's just looking at the code, and it's like, you still have my update information. But it's as simple a page you could do back then.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, it needs, I got to revamp it.
Yeah. Very nice. Okay. Yeah. Well.
And then are you on any other social media, Instagram or?
I am... Technically on Instagram,
okay.
I think it's Rocking Cave or something, but I don't do a whole lot on that.
Okay.
Although I think some of my Facebook stuff may be posted on there.
Okay.
I just used both of my Twitter accounts for the first time in months.
There it goes.
So.
Okay.
Cool. And I will link all that stuff down in the description of the podcast. So if you guys want to go find him, you guys can read all of his books.
Please
if you want to know about history of Illinois. And then some of your novels, or have you written one?
I've written one novel.
Okay.
Which I'm getting ready to relaunch later this year
put
it on Amazon because
nice.
I've had books on Amazon, but I've never focused on that because on nonfiction, regional history.
Yeah.
Yeah. I put it on there so the book sells from 3 copies a month to 6 copies a month.
Sure. I mean,
you know, it's just one more. It's just like having another store.
Sure. Yeah.
For fiction, it's a national, international audience.
Yeah.
I have to go on Amazon. So I have watched more podcasts and webinars in the last 2 months than I did all through COVID, trying to figure out what are the best practices? What do I need to do from the writing standpoint? What do I need to do from the cover standpoint?
Right.
Picking the category.
Mm-hmm.
For regional history, it doesn't matter. On Amazon, it's state and local history. That is the category. I will never be a top ranking book because somebody write local history in New York. There's just a whole lot more readers for that.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But fiction, you know, the coming of it, this is a historical fantasy coming of age.
Right.
But if I look in young adult, coming of age, the top 20 books, 7 of them are Harry Potter.
Of course.
And most of the others. And the same thing, fantasy, young wow. adult fantasy.
Yeah. Okay.
Harry Potter, and it's like other, it's like, okay, no, we are not putting.
You're not going to be classified.
It's like, we're going to go down a couple levels.
Right.
You know.
Yeah. Right. All right. Well, it's been insightful.
Yeah.
Different world.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I don't even know what to think right now.
I know.
I've got so many thoughts running through my head about the crazy stuff that's happened in Southern Illinois.
All right. Yeah. Well, find it, learn more, and thank you so much for your time.
Well, thank you for having me.
Okay. Until next time.
Bye.